It's just like. Welcome to the DL Gaming Podcast. This week we're going to be talking about Fallout London, Ship of Fools, and Deep Rock Galactic Survivor, which, oh my god, is fucking so fun. But first, my name is Christian.
I'm Bobby.
My name is Nick.
Oh, okay.
My name is Nick.
Wait, what? I thought you were last because it goes by age.
Oh, does it? I go second every time. I don't know.
What?
Christian switched it up on the mic checks and you went second, so maybe that was throwing you off?
That's probably what it is, yeah.
I think you guys have to duel to the death now. You set it up the same time, and now I don't know what to do with that.
We should have, one day, I think a really good idea would be the Discord to vote for all four of us to play games against each other, and it'd be four different games, whether that be like speedrunning something or an actual PvP game. And then that's how we determine who goes intro, like first, second, last, and all that stuff for like a whole year.
I love it. Also, our scene was wrong, so the YouTube video is going to be... It's fixed. We're good. Nick, What are we plugging this week?
This week, we're plugging the MTG on the DL podcast. This is our Magic the Gathering-themed podcast hosted by me. Sometimes it won't be hosted by me if I'm on vacation or dead or, I don't know, tired. It features people like Emilio and one of our new, I don't want to say cast members, Samir, who's one of my dear friends of like 12 years. And Christian will be on the podcast, not this week, but the following week. We will record his episode this week, but it will show up the following week. We talk about all kinds of stuff from art to, what is standard, what is things for new players, all kinds of things as far as Magic the Gathering and the Magic the Gathering universe. News, new releases, anything you can think of. So come over and you can hear me talk some more, more winning than this. So, yeah.
You guys, you might think from that intro, you're like, I don't know if I want to check out this. Dude, just do it. It's actually really good. And I'm excited for this episode because... I don't want to spoil any, but maybe a little bit of a tease. You know, I haven't played Magic before, and I'm looking for love out there in the world of Magic the Gathering. And I understand there's lots of colors, and so I just want to see what they can offer me and what I might be interested in. So that's an episode coming out if you're interested in me finding my Magic color.
We call it Love is Colorblind for love. Sniper.
Is that what we call it?
That's what I'm titling the episode.
Oh my god. Okay. On the show, we ping things. And Bobby, what do you got this week?
Ooh, I've got some stuff. So we record these on Sunday, but they come out on Tuesday. So by the time people are listening to this, this might be old news. But over the weekend, Jeff Keighley tweeted the games that were going to appear in the opening night live appearances for Gamescom. And I haven't been paying too much attention to Gamescom, so this was all kind of news to me. The list of games that he included, many of them we've already heard of before, and out of all of them, there's maybe a few that I'm excited about. Little Nightmares 3 is going to be featured. I've never played any of those games. I know Emilio was a big fan, but I am kind of interested in checking those out. Dune Awakening, which is the open world, I guess, not survival game, but just open world, like RPG coming from Funcom, who created The Secret World a long time ago, but recently Conan Exiles. So that could be good. And also from Machine Head, the developers that brought us the new Wolfenstein games, is that new Indiana Jones game, which I'm very much looking forward to. Anything on that big long list that looks interesting to you guys?
Dude. You go first, Snipper, because my response is probably going to be long-winded.
I am one of the Arakeen. I yearn for the deserts of Arrakis, Bobby and Nick. I'm so fucking hyped for Dune Awakening. I wanted an MMO like this for a long time, and they've made some tweets like there have been some articles where they're saying we're inspired by games like Star Wars Galaxies because we have all these professions that are non-combat in the game. And I guess the one question mark for Dune Awakening is I don't know. I haven't heard. Please someone correct me if you have. How much of an MMO it's going to be? Is it going to be like Conan Exiles where it's like, I think 78 people server? It's probably wrong on that too, but like, you know, taking the M out of MMO, it's just kind of a multiplayer online game, not a massively multiplayer online game. So I guess I'll be psyched if it's like thousands of players, like kind of the MMOs we enjoy. But yeah, that's probably the one that I'm most excited for. How about you, Nick?
I think this, by the way, is a Conan Exile / Ark situation because it's saying MMO. But when you read the description on the website, it says Dune Awakening combines the grit and creativity of a sandbox survival game with the interactivity of a large, persistent multiplayer game to create a unique and ambitious open world survival MMO. And you can't really have open world survival MMOs with them being like World of Warcraft or anything of that scale.
Until now, dude. Until Dune fucking Awakening.
Well, I hope. If they make it work, then I'll be happy. But
I'm going to be a little water vendor outside the Capitol, helping new adventurers on their journey, giving them sage advice, passing along secrets and, you know, doing espionage. That's my character.
Funny enough, I'll probably be a water smuggler. And so we could probably do work, or I can just strong arm you into selling things and buying things from me. So,
dude, we're already doing the role playing in the role playing RPG. I love it. Let's go.
As far as anything else on the list that kind of takes my fancy is this is probably going to be one thing that's like the weeaboo thing of the week, the year for me is Dragon Ball Sparking Zero. So the Dragon Ball Z fighting game that's been really popular is a 2D fighting game. It's just like a normal, like side to side, kind of like a Street Fighter. This game features the Tenkaichi Budokai setup where it's a 3D platforming or it's a 3D platform fighter where if you get ringed out, you lose. But it's the oldest form of very popular Dragon Ball fighting games. It was super, super, super popular during Dragon Ball Budokai, Dragon Ball Tenchi. Like, they made like four of these things and then they just all of a sudden stopped. The interesting thing about these is that you can experience pretty much the whole Dragon Ball storyline or Dragon Ball Z storyline by playing this. You experience the whole, like it plays every scene, every important scene from the anime in the engine that they have. And so, yeah, if you've never seen Dragon Ball Z or anything like that, you can definitely play this and experience the new story. And the other interesting thing is that they haven't made these for the Dragon Ball Super universe, and it's probably going to have that in there as well. So it's going to be a really, really, really long game.
Is it obnoxious if I say it Dragon Ball Z? Is that like, does that set you guys off?
kind of not. But the thing is, like, in Japan, they call it Dragon Ball Z. Like, they don't say Z, and I just think it's part of the fucking universe at this point. Because, like, there's Dragon Ball, Dragon Ball Z, Dragon Ball Z Kai, like, Kai, Dragon Ball Super, like, I think Z is truly it. I don't get bothered by people saying Zed.
You took that stuff in the most serious way, which I appreciate. I like it. I like a serious answer. Bobby, where are you on the ZZ?
I don't care. I don't know.
Okay.
And I don't know the rules to Dragon Ball Z. Although I am surprised that you are not looking forward to Sid Meier's Civilization 7. No mention of that.
I am and I ain't. So every time a new Civ comes out, I end up almost on the brink of divorce with my wife because what ends up happening is like, Leslie, I won't talk to you for 2 days. I'm going to be playing Civ with my friends on a Saturday and a Sunday. And yeah, that ends up getting my wife mad at me.
Yeah, it's a time sink.
Yeah, there's been times where we put, I think it was 13 hours in one game in 2 days, and we're just like, we're almost done.
Wow.
Yeah. That's intense, dude. I'm not excited. I just think the evolution of the Civ games has gone in a little bit more of a complex direction, and that's fine. I like complex 4X games, but I think I played Civ for like a very specific reason. The one more turn pull, like quick turns, clear strategies, you know, three ways to win, four ways to win. And now that there's like governors of my cities and trade routes and spies and all these other mechanics that they've layered on it, I just think it's kind of like dragging the ship down a bit.
We actually have conflicting theories about a 4X game. When does this happen?
Indeed. All right, well, Civ 6 was not that big of a hit. I mean, it sold a lot of copies, but I remember a lot of people being disappointed. So I never played it. I love Civ 5, never touched 6. We'll see what happens with 7. Also, there's a new Batman Arkham game coming out, but does anyone play those anymore?
I don't. I'm sure people do.
I think a lot of people do, actually.
A lot of people did, and I think a lot of people do. And I think if you want to get new people to these, you remake the first game because it was so good, even compared to the ones that come out now. The last one I played was not the one that was just released, but the one before that. So yeah.
I think they're good games, but I've told this story before, but I started playing the second one. I don't know what it is, Asylum, whatever, but I started playing it, and about 20 minutes into it, I realized I had already played and beaten this game, and I have no memory of it, like zero recollection of it
at
all.
That is a terrible thing for a video game.
Yeah.
And hey, I beat your game and I can't remember it.
Yeah. It's just... wasted my life. But it's not that it's a bad game. It's just, it's very similar to the first one. Maybe it's better in some ways, but it didn't really do much of that different. So I don't know. I didn't think they were still making these ones, but I guess here we are.
Okay. Well, I'm excited to, my cat's getting my coffee. Hello. I'm excited for Gamescom Opening Night Live. This list seems cool, but I'm sure there's games not on this list that are going to be announced, like actual announcements instead of just new news about previously announced games. So I think maybe next podcast we'll have, no, the podcast after the next podcast, right? Eventually we'll talk about the newly announced games one day.
We'll have a lot on the radar coming up soon.
Okay. Guys, the Borderlands movie, guess what? Saw it today before I left Edmonton. Fucking good.
Wow.
Okay. You are probably going to be assassinated.
No.
I was surprised. I mean, I went in there with the bias of it sucking, and I came out being like, that was an okay movie. Like, nothing horrible.
Yeah, I think people are kind of dogpiling on it on social media and the internet just because, I don't know, like, somebody made a witty remark and everyone's like, that's cool. Now that's my identity and opinion. I'm just going to mimic that. But that often happens where a movie gets so much bad press that you kind of go into it with such low expectations that even if it hits like that 50% mark, you're like, oh, better than I thought. And you go out with a positive feeling. I have yet to see it. I went and saw the new Alien movie instead of Borderlands. I know I said I was going to see it, but this week, definitely going to go see it.
Dude, I feel so betrayed by you right now. I had two ticket options in my hand, and I said, you know what? Everyone is seeing this on the podcast. At least Bobby will keep his word. I don't know about Emilio, because last episode Nick wasn't on, and now you haven't seen it, and I haven't seen Alien. So
and it's going to be on streaming in like soon. I don't know. It may be on streaming.
Yeah,
I'm going to
watch Alien tomorrow.
Okay.
Okay.
Nice. As far as I ended up watching Deadpool. Like 2 days ago, 3 days ago, that has to be one of the funniest fucking superhero movies of all time, dude. Like if you haven't seen, any of the Marvel movies, a lot of it won't stand out, but there's even callbacks to like Marvel movies from the early 2000s and late 90s. And it is super good.
I haven't gotten to a Deadpool movie. I go into it and I come out of it. I'm like, that was stupid. And I hated it. Well, hate is a strong word, but it's just not for me. Probably.
It's hard to watch these superhero movies now, especially this late in the game. You pretty much need a degree to understand what's going
superhero
on.
Superhero studies. Yeah.
So what's funny is that this one, pretty much references and explains everything that it references. And like much of the history of like, as long as you've watched like the main Avengers timeline and like nothing else, like none of the TV shows, you'll still be fine. Like watching this movie. The jokes are 9 times out of 10 hit really hard and are hilarious. Like me and Leslie could not stop laughing during that movie.
Oh, that's good. The Borderlands movie got quite a few chuckles out of me, which is weird because I played the Borderlands games. I don't think I laughed once. In fact, I think I had a scowl at a lot of the I was like, really? That's not funny. But it was half the times because the dialogue was so cringy and half the times because, you know, it genuinely made me laugh. So
The critique I've heard about the dialogue in this movie is that it seems like this movie was written to be watched on a second monitor because everything is being described as it happens by the characters. They're like, is this your house? And then she's like, yeah. And then like it happens to that, like every single time they go somewhere or do something, it's like pretty much explained through the dialogue.
At the start, they drop a lot of exposition through dialogue that way. And that's fine. It did feel like a slow start. But after that, honestly, I didn't really notice anything too out of place with like awkward. This is the special key. We need to do the special thing. And by the way, this is the whole backstory of the special. Like, there was nothing really of that anymore. It flowed quite nicely. It even surprised me. I was like, whoa, didn't see that ending coming. Which, anyways. Moving on. Highlights, games we have been playing. Bobby, we played a game together. Is that this game?
We sure did. We played Ship of Fools, which is, how to describe this? It's a co-op roguelite with up to two players. And the best way I can describe this game is it's got that Overcooked energy where you're frantically running around a boat instead of a kitchen, and you are trying to fight off monsters and reload weapons and swat away their attacks, all sorts of things. So it's like Overcooked where it's just busy and confusing, but it's like a Sea of Thieves boat battle that you're engaged in. And it's actually a pretty good time. There's all sorts of things that you and your partner have to do, and it can get pretty chaotic. You got to repair the ship, fire the cannons, reload the cannons, swat away the projectiles in this like charged attack type of move, which is actually kind of difficult to pull off. And sometimes you get boarded and you got to swat the enemies. It's a lot to do.
I couldn't land one of those deflect attacks. I was like, I miss the baseball swings in real life too. I'm just not quartered.
Well, not only do you have to hit the projectile to swat it away, but you're trying to hit it right back at the enemy so it does damage. And it's not like super hard to do, but you're focused on so much that it becomes difficult. But I actually had a pretty good time because it was really hard at first, but I could feel us getting better and better as we play. And that's a rewarding feeling in a game. But it is a roguelike, so you play through, you die, you unlock some stuff. It makes your next run a little easier. You unlock characters, upgrades that you can get during your next run. We didn't really get too far in it, so I don't know if this is a fair judgment, but it didn't really seem like there are a whole lot of items that I could build a lot of synergies with, you know, like, oh, this cannon pairs well with this cannon. Or like this does something with the harpoon. And that's a big part of like these roguelikes, I think, is you get these combinations and these synergies out of the item that are really cool. And there's so many of them and you find the ones that work and, you know, it's all luck, like getting the right ones on a run. But then when you get that right combination on a run, it's just like everything comes together and you have a really good time. Didn't really happen with this game, but I think the furthest we made it was to level 2. And it did have a boss fight at the end of level 1, which I appreciated. And it's hard to beat the game, or I'm sorry, beat the boss, like without knowing, like going into it fresh, because there's really a lot of mechanics that you're not going to understand. So first time was like practice. We got to him again. We started learning how the game works, how the boss fight worked, and we were able to overcome. So I don't know. I like games like that. Games that are like a little on the difficult side, but they also give you the freedom to like discover stuff on your own and like figure it out, because that's like a really rewarding feeling. Not like another game I played this week, which I won't talk too much about, but I've been trying all sorts of games with my girlfriend just to see what sticks. So far, nothing. But we tried For the King 2, and there were so many pop-up tutorials. I had to figure out how to turn it off, but it was just like every time it was just like, Royal Tutor, this is how you do this. Press the button to do this. And it just like literally everything that happened that game, there was a pop-up for. I was just drowning in pop-ups. It was obnoxious.
Can drowning in pop-ups. I like that.
Can confirm.
I like that
it feels
as a
like
thing.
Like 1997 internet with that shit, dude. It is so bad. Once you get through all of them, the game becomes playable, but there really is a pop-up for almost every single thing that happens. You know,
18
what this
plus
game
webcams. Fix my dick.
You know what Ship of Fools reminds me of, and I don't know why it, like, this game just came out of nowhere, is Barotrauma. Have you guys played that?
I've heard of it, haven't
no,
played it.
No, that was one from a long time ago that I wanted to play. Yeah, Barotrauma. Yeah, you're on a submarine with co-op submarine survival.
You're on a space kind of submarine, and you go through and you like explore like Eldritch abominations, and then everybody has a role, like they can be an engineer or like a medic. And you can play, I think it's up to like 8 players, but yeah, you can play as little as 2. And you run, it's like one of those games where it's 2D and you run through all the parts of the submarine, fixing things and killing things inside that invade your ship and stuff.
And that had a serious tone, though. And this was just a little bit more accessible, I think, and that's reflected in the art style. Whereas Barotrauma, I'm reading through the Steam page and I'm already kind of feeling a bit overwhelmed with like everything I must have to do on this submarine, you know?
And that's why you got to have more friends, you know? That's why you got to...
When we were playing it, we were like, surely this must be 4-player co-op. And no, it wasn't. And that was a little disappointing at first. But then when I thought about it, it would be too much playing with 4 players. We're having enough trouble just splitting up the responsibilities between ourselves and not hitting each other with paddles when we were trying to deflect things. And
yeah, I guess you could knock each other out. Yeah. I like playing this game, Bobby. I was looking forward to, we're recording the podcast a little earlier in the day usually, which gives us some time to play games after, which I was looking forward to, but coming home on a long road trip, it wasn't going to work this week. But I think this one might have some staying power of like that time after the podcast, some co-op mm-hmm. gaming time.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. I did play it. I enjoyed it too. I did play it by myself, single player, not nearly as fun, but it still works. But yeah, I would definitely return to this game. And it was cheap. It was on sale for like $13 or something like that for the whole package. I don't know. There was like DLC. Maybe it was just a soundtrack, but totally worth it.
We kind of, we cheesed the first boss after we unlocked those, what are they called? Urchin bombs? Like those big
pufferfish bombs. Yeah.
The pufferfish bombs.
I mean, we didn't cheese it. We got that item and then we figured out how to use it after blowing ourselves up a few times with it.
Okay, Nick. So we get these pufferfish bombs and we're shooting them out and they start small and they do damage to everything around it, obviously. And then they get really big,
you know?
Yeah. Well, and then they puff up and they start floating towards your ship. And I'm like, oh my God, wait, is the bomb I just shot going to fucking come back and hit us? And it did. It did a fuckload of damage. So each time you load the cannon, you get 2 shots and you want to shoot the second pufferfish. You want to shoot your first pufferfish with your second pufferfish. So they both blow up and kill each other. And if you don't hit that pufferfish, you take damage from 2 pufferfish floating towards your, it's like a risk reward thing that I found satisfying, but we just cheesed, it wasn't cheesing, but we eliminated the boss in like no time at all with this.
That sounds really cool though. Like the dynamic of that bomb sounds really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope there's more interesting items like that in the game. That was the most interesting one that we found, but yeah, love to play more of this game. Ship of Fools. Dope.
Ship of Fools, but it's no Deep Rock Galactic Survivor, which if you've been under a rock, this is the Vampire Survivors meets Deep Rock Galactic game. You kill and collect things and you have to get out on time. And oh my God, you guys have both played this game, right?
Mm-hmm. I played a lot of this game this week too.
Okay. If you don't get to that pod on the, I swear it leaves before the 1 second mark, actually. I think it's just fucking with me because I get to the ramp and it blasts off and it leaves me there to die. And I'm like, I think I had a little bit more time. I think the last second is quicker than the other seconds. I think they just do that to fuck you. Do you feel that?
I felt just the opposite. I felt like as long as I was on the ramp and there was like the time ran out, it would still let me in.
What? No way. I've been on the ramp like,
well, they
doing
give
my
you 30
machine.
Seconds, dude. Are you like trying to get every last bit of XP and cut it close?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm gonna do. Okay, so first of all, this is a relatively simple game as far as like what you're doing. You just walk around WASD like any other, I assume, Vampire Survivor. I haven't played any other ones, by the way. This is my first one. So it's super chill, good way to relax, and it feels nice to come to this podcast being able to just, you know, walk among mere mortals again as just explaining a simple, you know, I'm coming here every week and I'm like, here's the 4X game with 50,000 mechanics and it's difficult. And I feel like I can't quite explain what the game is and what I'm trying to get out of it. And I don't think I'm going to have that problem with Deep Rock Galactic Survivor because it's just, It's just a simple game, and that's fine. It's fine to have simple games, okay? Just want to... No need to overcomplicate your gaming life. What else did I write here? I think this game is an intelligent slot machine, maybe sent to enslave humanity. I don't know about that last part, but like, it'll on purpose place things to make you feel really good or really shitty. Like, I'm running to the pod, and I see, like, the meta resource I need to upgrade my character off to the side. And so, right, I have a decision. Am I going to run back to the pod in this 30 seconds, or I'm going to go off and get these pearls that I need, that I really need to get my character unlocked between levels? And spoiler alert, you go for the pearls, you don't make it out on time. And there's all these situations, and opposite, when I come off the ship, the drop pod, for the first time, and I see exactly what I need right in front of me, and it gives me a lot of XP. I don't think that's random. I think this is a slot machine meant to make you feel really bad and really good. And I think that is what the game does really well. How do you feel about that, Bobby? Do you agree?
When this timer starts and you need to get to the drop pod, you really don't have time to do much, anything else. Like, you can take a long way around and grab a little XP on your way over there, but you can't go off mining stuff. You pretty much got to run straight for...
Then why do they put stuff? I swear I've explored this path and there wasn't this stuff here. And now all of a sudden there's everything I need.
I mean,
why would they put that there?
They drop some stuff during... The map is what it is when you start the level. So, I mean, you can do your exploring before you kill the boss. But there's some things. It's interesting because this is your first Vampire Survivor game. So you're coming into it with a very different perspective than the rest of us. It was really difficult for me to adjust my play style with this game because you have to always be mining with this game. ABM, always be mining. Like all the other Vampire Survivor games, you're really just a killing machine. Like, that's primarily what you're doing.
And yeah, right.
Like, your number one priority is just to kill as many enemies as possible, as quickly as possible. But with this, it's really like you want to kill the enemies just so they get off your back, because you actually want to be out there getting resources. So you have a different number one objective. And it took me a while to realize that. Because sometimes I would wedge myself in a corner and I'm like, oh, I got this like kill tunnel going on right here, and I'm just slaughtering all of them. And like, I make pretty good XP, but I'm not getting all the resources that I need to really excel in my run. So I don't know if you'd have that problem because you haven't come from any other Vampire Survivor games. Someone in our Discord did mention, I think they directed this right at me, they said you should check out Soulstone Survivors again because that game has come a long way. Now, before Deep Rock Galactic Survivor, I would have said Soulstone Survivors is the best Vampire Survivor game. I will, and that one, you know, like I had said, that one's really just about as killing as many enemies as possible. But I might revisit that this week just to see where that game's at. But I really like DRG Survivor. And, you know, one thing that I noticed as I've been playing it this week, I really like how a problem that I've had in a lot of these Vampire Survivor games is you can pause and look at your inventory, and in some of them, they'll even tell you like how much of each stat you've accumulated. But in DRG, the stats are additive. So if you get an item that says +3 crit chance, then your crit chance is going to go up 3%. It's not multiplicative or whatever. Then you have to like calculate. They actually did later versions, they added stat boosts that multiply rather than add, but they highlight it in yellow and they're very clear about that. And it's only a few of them. It's very few of them because they're so good. But for the most part, it's really easy. If you focus on it, you can get to 100% crit just by picking all the right things or rolling for the right, what do they call them? Drops or whatever, or unlocks. But I didn't really get that in a lot of the other the Soulstone Survivors games. One thing I wish they would do with DRG Survivor is let you know how much damage you're doing with your weapons. They tell you at the end of the round, so I can see, oh my God, this weapon was killing it. Like, that was a good investment. Whatever I was doing with that one, keep doing it. But you don't get that information during the run, so it's really hard to know what you should be investing in or how you should be shaping your build. I feel like that's a design choice. I feel like they're doing that on purpose. But I don't know. I don't know if I agree with it. Maybe I just don't understand the reasoning for it.
It was interesting because as you are going through your runs, the higher level you get on your character, the more weapons you unlock, and you can unlock up to 4 weapons. And then there's masteries that you can do, weapon mastery runs you can do where you only have 1 weapon. And I felt when I did those, I was like unstoppable because all the upgrades I got were for 1 weapon instead of split between 4 weapons, you know, like all the random pulls I got were just for 1. And so I have like really overpowered turrets that were just following me around, mowing everything down. It was like I was on easy mode. And that's never the case. I mean, I haven't played that much, but so far that hasn't been the case on a normal run because I just don't get the pop-ups in the same way for the turret. I have to split them between all the other things I pick up.
You can get upgrades for all your other weapons. I definitely experienced that too, but I don't know how far you've gotten into those weapon masteries, but when you get into the later levels, you really notice the deficiency of the 1 weapon. Like it's good at right. some things, but then you get certain types of enemies where it's just like, oh, I can't do anything about that. Or if I get like too many enemies, this becomes totally ineffective. So it is very challenging, those weapon masters.
Those turrets with the electrical damage, brother. I don't know. I'm zapping everything in sight. I'm doing chain lightning. It's I'm unstoppable, but I'm also only like 6 hours in the game or something. So it's not that much.
I'm unstoppable, but
yeah, I barely played the game. So I just have a couple questions. Is there anything worse in this game than deciding to go for the magnet before the drop pod and then dying? The magnet collects all the XP that's on the ground of the entire level that you've missed. And there's so many times I'm like, oh, the magnet's right beside the drop pod. Just a quick stop at the magnet and then I'll be good. And then I just get swarmed and die. Like they ambush me on purpose. One of those moments they put in there that isn't random. They want me to go for the magnet.
I think that's a new player thing. I never have trouble making it to the drop pod in time now. Like that's,
you're just not distracted. You're just like full motor back.
I've also played so much of this that I've unlocked a lot of the systemic upgrades. So like every time I play, I've got like a ton of extra, like I've maxed out crit. I've maxed out damage. Like I've got a lot of benefits going into this too. So I think as you unlock that stuff, it'll become a lot easier.
The other thing I was doing was on the steps of the drop pod, you can't be attacked by creatures. But you can. I just figured that out later because things were exploding around me and I died on the steps as I was trying to like make this kill tunnel to collect XP. That felt really bad. That was like, I closed the game right away and I'm not playing this again. And then I like started it up like half an hour later. I was like, it's not so bad.
I don't know why you'd expect to be invincible on the steps though.
I mean, this is all my fault. I'm just venting to everyone.
I'm 3 feet above these guys. There's no way they can touch me.
They can't touch me. They can't touch me. What was the last thing I wanted? When I went to Edmonton, it was for Rianne's friend. She was having an engagement party and her husband and me were hanging out. And I was like, I see you have a Steam Deck. Have you tried Deep Rock Galactic Survivor? So by the way, 6 hours in this game and I've already convinced a complete random person to download it and play it and enjoy it. So that's
how you
good,
know you
right?
really like a game, by the way, is when you get strangers, you're like, yeah, you ever hear this shit? And they're like, what?
Yeah. Yeah.
So are you this is the dentist's office? You have 3 cavities.
Well, he was like, oh, I love Vampire Survivor games. And I was like, yeah, keep calling them that. Call them VSLs as a short. I think that's what everyone's calling it. So, you know, one more person calling it a VSL is never a bad thing. And I know this is going long, so last thing. All the classes play so different. I was very happy with that. They all felt like different play styles. I think I had the most fun with the Driller, but I just wanted to ask you, Bobby, what one was your favorite? And then, Nick, what one do you think would be your favorite?
Let's let Bobby go first.
Well, I like the scout with Zhukov. Like once he hits that third, what do they call it? Where you get the big upgrade and it does the spiral pattern, that thing, like once I get that and I get freezing on that, just game over. But
right.
The driller is so much fun just because he can drill so quickly. And on a few runs, I maxed out his mining. So it was literally like walls weren't a thing. Like I would just like run. I got a ton of movement speed and a ton of mining stacked, and I would just run through walls like they were nothing, dude. I was like, I wasn't really doing much damage, but like I could just go anywhere and just run away from any confrontation. And that was a lot of fun. But yeah,
the way you said that was like uncomfortably powerful to me. You're like, walls were nothing. They were nothing to me.
They were nothing to me.
Well, that is one thing that's different about this game too, is it's, you have to mine your way through stuff. A lot of the other VSLs, it's just a big open map. Maybe there's a few objects in your way, but this one, you can tunnel a hole through an area and escape enemies or use that to get somewhere. So that is an important factor, and the driller does it really well.
Yeah. And Nick, what's your favorite?
Out of all the weapons that I've seen in the last, 2 minutes, watching trailers and looking at stuff in the wiki and things like that, as me being the dumb heavy guy always in every game, I like the gunner weapons, obviously. I would say the Thunderhead heavy cannon, which you get at rank 12 apparently, seems very interesting as far as what it does.
That's a hard weapon to use. So what that one does is it fires a shot at, I think, the nearest enemy, and then all the shots it fires after that go in that direction. So,
ooh, that's weird. That sounds interesting.
But it's an incredibly powerful bullet. Like, they shred, but it's kind of, you have to, like, actively aim that. And there's a few weapons in this game that you do, like the shotgun, but that just shoots whatever direction you're facing. This one will lock on to a direction for the full clip. So it's very strange.
It's like an anti-boss weapon.
Yeah, it's really good, but you have to play totally different with that if you're going to use that one. But the gunner's got some really strong builds. I do like the gunner. The engineer, I like the whole turret thing, and I always feel like they're doing, like they'd be really powerful, but they never really seem to deliver too much. The flame turret's pretty good, but like, I don't know. I'm always disappointed in the engineer. It's probably my least favorite class, just like DRG for some reason.
It followed you there. And the other thing that's cool is like it mimics the gameplay loop in Deep Rock Galactic. I haven't spent too much time in Deep Rock Galactic, but I feel like I understand how to play that game better now that I've played Deep Rock Galactic Survivor, because in Deep Rock Galactic I would always get there's just so much to mine and so much to do, and it's very easy for me to get distracted and off the focus of the goal. And Bobby's smiling because I think he's experienced this.
I was smiling because that sounded like the lyrics to a Smash Mouth song.
and this, I was like, okay, no, I do have to, I can be focused in DRG, you know? Anyways, that's Deep Rock Galactic Survivor, an awesome Vampire Survivors. Like, people in our Discord are talking about it. We're talking about it. Super cheap. I mean, I don't think we can recommend it enough. It's super fun. So,
yeah, how much is that game?
I think I bought it for $11, dude. Star Wars Outlaws wants 110 of my decals, and Deep Rock Galactic Survivor has given me all the dopamine for $11, you know? Yeah, like
$10 USD. That's outrageous for that game. So good.
All right, Nick. Can you do this segment in a British accent the whole time?
No.
No? Okay.
Not the whole time.
Okay. Well, I didn't know what your capabilities
were. You think this is a game about Fallout London or something?
Hmm? Yeah, that's so good, dude. Come on.
So, obviously, I'm talking about Fallout London because we talked about it at the beginning of the podcast. This has to be the best fan-made content I've played in a video game in a long, long, long time. Even more fun than DayZ, in my opinion. And that's very hard for me to say because I loved DayZ for so long, like the original Arma 2 mod. Fallout London is a overhaul mod for Fallout 4. The best way to get the mod in general is to buy Fallout 4 on GOG. And I know what you're going to say. Hey, Nick, why do I have to buy Fallout 4 again? I own it on Steam. Because Bethesda is a bunch of dickheads, and they made it almost impossible to install the game easily for Fallout 4 on the Steam version.
Nick, literally, I feel like dickheads is a UK thing, by the way. I mean, like, dickheads.
That's,
like, I feel
that's
like,
why I use it.
Okay.
Just to get this out of the way first, because it's kind of like an entry point thing, and especially if you've been looking at it, I totally say this is worth $15 because you can get it on GOG for $15. Fallout London is free. You just buy Fallout 4. You literally click play for Fallout London. It installs the mod, and then you play. That's it. For Steam, there's over 60 steps.
Wow.
Of editing text files, of moving files around, ensuring things aren't installed in certain places, downloading certain versions of the game, making sure that your save files are gone, all this other shit that you have to do. I looked at a tutorial. The tutorial itself was 42 minutes long.
Okay, so obviously that's a no-go. You would never want to subject yourself, because you're not getting achievements, or I guess you can track your playtime, which people might like, but... Yeah,
you can track your playtime through GOG, because all you literally do is you double click Fallout London and then it goes through whatever you're playing it through. Now, this is not to say that this is perfect. I've been playing and there have been some bugs. I wouldn't say game breaking bugs because I haven't lost a save or anything, but there's been a couple of times where I've had to reload something. Now, as the Fallout crackhead I am, I'm pressing F5 like fucking crazy every time I'm in the wasteland. This overhaul, by the way... Absolutely a complete overhaul. So this takes place in London, so the Pip-Boy and Vault-Tec doesn't exist. The way the story starts, minor spoiler here, is that you're in a lab and you find something called an Attaboy. And an Attaboy is the British version of a Pip-Boy, but instead of wearing it, it's like a little cassette player. And the story behind it is that there was like a plane that crashed in Britain, and the Secret Service for the UK stole the Pip-Boy on the crash site, and then they made this. Like this is what they made. The game has cinematics, more cinematics than I've ever experienced in a fucking normal Fallout game, by the way. And they're in-game cinematics, like riding a fucking train. The train crashing, getting sucked through a tunnel when it floods with water, like all kinds of shit that happens that Fallout just does not have, like interactive things like that at all. There is a moment where I was in a sewage system and it started raining and the whole tunnel flooded and it was a cutscene and I had like no bullets left. I maybe had like 4 left. And as soon as the tunnel flooded, all the ghouls at the end of the tunnel woke up and my character like got out of the water. And it's not like, oh, I just crouched out of the water like in normal Fallout. Like it was a cinematic, like my character getting out of the water and the water's dripping. And I see these ghouls and they're running at me. And a little fun fact, when you shoot the water in Fallout, bullets don't go through the water because that's not what happens in real life. And I missed all my shots because my character was all disheveled. Like the screen was blurry and watery from me getting out of the water. Like, it's stuff like that that is in this game that makes it amazing. This is, like, a clear fan-made process that is even, I would say, even better than the fucking Fallout 4 source material. The story is awesome. The way they get you to get invested is that your character, after you're in a train crash, you have a severe, messed up cranial, injury, and then you have a severe spine injury. So all your stats are reduced by 1. Physical and mental stats. And so when you start and after that train crash, you're given 2 options and they're very simple options. You can either follow these humans that are friendly to you, which is very rare in the wasteland, or those humans also tell you about a place called Thames Haven. And the River Thames is in the UK and not to get too spoily, but fish people may be a thing. Which doesn't exist in Fallout 4.
Fish people. Oh, like in the Fallout TV show. They had those like shark people that they were experimenting on. They're like turned out to be killer sharks.
Kind of. Okay. But they are actual people that you can interact with and go to their town. I haven't gone there. The game also does not make Fallout trivial like the other ones do. For example, I have a quest right now that says, get this badge so you can continue the main storyline. It doesn't tell me where to go to get the badge. It just says, get the badge. And what it is I have to find the fucking, find any officer of that faction and kill them and take their badge. And they could just be roaming around. They could be in a place that I could look up, but I don't want to look up yet because I'm literally just exploring London at this point. And I've already put in 6 hours into this game, and I'm only level 8, and it's so fun. There's unique enemies that they put in the game. There are these things called dryad nymphs, which are these ghouls that were fused to plants and animals, and they're like dryads. Like, they're like people that are, have like plant growth through them. They have giant ladybugs. They have irradiated shrews. Like, there's all new weapons, all new perks, all new enemies in a fucking fan mod, dude. The factions that you fight in the game, like the default enemy factions that you can't interact with friendly, there's one that's all knights. There's one that's all like colonial, the red coats, and they use like muskets and like powder weaponry and like flags that are spears. It is so creative and it is so fun that like I have to play other games so I don't just sink my whole night into playing this, because I want to play for like 6 hours straight.
I want you to play the what you're talking about, by the way, sounds awesome.
Yeah, it is. It now, like I said, there are bugs. There are also things that they change on the fly because, for example, there was a quest where I had to find a key card in the tutorial video because I couldn't find the key card where it's supposed to be. And I'm like, what the fuck? And in the tutorial video, it's like, hey, it's also here as well. So I thought there was a bug in my game. Turns out I had to go to Reddit. They changed the quest 3 days ago, so it wasn't as easy and you couldn't get broken weapons immediately. And so you have to do another quest to be able to access that area that I'm talking about. One bug that I constantly have a problem with, and I shouldn't be doing this anyways, is whenever I alt tab out of the game, if I am in full screen, it changes my resolution to a super, super high resolution, like higher than 2440 by whatever. And, now what ends up happening is that everything gets distorted in the video, like in the game, like when you aim down sights, it's way above the actual crosshair. There's a simple fix for this. What you do is you go to NVIDIA, you go to Fallout 4, and you just click apply optimized settings or whatever settings that you've chosen, and it keeps that. But the problem is whenever you alt tab, you have like a 25% chance of it happening again. So don't alt tab. I don't want to give it a score yet, but from what I've played, it is well worth over $15. It is well worth the repurchasing price that I put into the game.
Fuck. I want to play this game now. No.
From the from the amazing accents from the voice acting in the game to the amazing writing that's in the game, I just can't get enough of it. It is Fallout. It's like rediscovering Fallout in a sense, right? I know the Fallout engine. I know how things work, like VATs and things like that. It's just that it's a new storyline. It's a new location. It's new weapons, new enemies. Even, dude, one of the coolest parts of the Fallout 4 is the fact that all the perks have animations. Guess what? All the ones in Fallout London have new, different animations. And there's no Pip-Boys. It's all Attaboys. And it's amazing. It is so good. It's so good, in fact, that I decided to stream it whenever I play it. And Leslie was like, I want to play this now, because she loves UK and British culture and things like that. So, and there's little Easter eggs where these guys, for example, there's these two British guys and they're friendly and they find a cooking magazine, and one of them just starts busting up laughing. And he's like, it's called Spotted Dick. And the other guy's like, what? And you got to remember, these are people in the future, in the far future, that have never experienced actual British culture. And so they don't know what Spotted Dick is. It's the same kind of joke where in Fallout 4, the guy who has a bunch of baseball memorabilia doesn't know what actual baseball is. He thinks it's a gladiatorial game where everybody beats the shit out of each other with bats. But it's like the British version of that. And it's all over the place.
That's cool.
I can talk about this game all night. I just want to cut it short. So far for me, 9 out of 10. The only thing that would give it a 10 out of 10 if there was a little bit less bugs. But hey, it's a fucking fan-made project. It's a great one. I wouldn't even call it a mod or a DLC. This is a full-on, like, pretty much a brand new game. So, yeah.
But we don't really give scored reviews to games. Should we? I genuinely don't know. Is that something we should do?
I don't know. When it's something like this, I'm one of those reviewers where if it's extremely good, no.
You know how I feel about that.
Yeah.
For me, if it's real, I'm one of those terrible people that like is part of the problem when it comes to like Yelp and stuff like that, where I either rate things really good or really bad. There's no in the middle for me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't like never 3 out of 5-star experience. That doesn't exist.
I won't waste my time. I just won't go back to that place. You know what I'm saying? But like, if I go to a place and it's amazing, 5 out of 5, if I go to a place, it's terrible, 1 out of 5. Like, so it's so good. Please, if you like Fallout, even if you don't like British culture, it's a new place, new weapons. Like 90% of the models are new, like in just the environment, the weapons, the enemies, they're all new. So check it out.
Sounds really cool. Hey then, Nicholas, do you like the Vagabonds?
The Vagabonds? No.
The little like the paper boys, and they have, you said last time, razors in their paper hats, and they cut people up. That sounds cool.
Yeah, they are a nuisance in this game. So far, the faction that I hate fighting the most, though, is the colonial faction that I was telling you about before, where they're like all redcoats and they like are all about the UK like naval scene. Their guns do so much damage, but what's hilarious is that if you can get them to miss, you just run up to them and beat the shit out of them because they take 80 years to reload their guns because they're like pulling
they have
out
like real muskets.
Yeah, they're like pouring in powder and they're using like a little jammer and then they're like putting in a wad and like shooting. But the thing is, like, once they miss, you can just sprint to them and beat the shit out of them. So it's hilarious.
Cool. Bobby, thoughts on Fallout London, a game you would want to play in a different universe, in a different body?
Yeah, you know how I feel about Fallout games. Not the biggest fan, although I did like 3. I will say that having modded a lot of games, that what you've described is consistent with my experience. GOG is always the way to go if you're going to mod a game. Every game that I've played, you know, all these old ones that have like these big mod packs, they all say this is, it's the same exact thing. You look at the steps to mod the GOG version and it's like 5 lines. And then the Steam version, it's like, well, chapter 1, you know? Yeah. So I don't know why that is really. I know, GOG does DRM free games, but I don't know why that would matter. Even with like the older games, I don't know what is it that they do in Steam. But yeah, and that's just a good place to get games in general. I think I'm not 100% sure about this, but I am actually pretty positive about this. I'm pretty sure the developer gets more of the cut if you buy it through, GOG than Steam. Maybe we could fact check that. I hear Christian's keyboard clacking away.
GOG offers indie developers, yeah, the hated sound, the clacking in the distance, 70-30 split on revenue, so that's GOG taking 30%.
Oh, so it's the exact same as Steam then, right? Steam's 30%.
Yeah, okay. I think Steam actually released like tiered systems, so the more money your game makes, the less Steam makes. I think the first tier, like, is that $1 million? They drop the split a little bit, and then going the more money you make, the less they take, basically. So
was it Epic Games that was giving developers more of a cut?
I think it was EGS store cut. I think if they used they had to use Unreal, though. I think that was it. They use Unreal for
game. They had to use, I think what it was is that you got a bigger cut if you used Unreal. If you weren't using Unreal, you got like a 70-30 or whatever, like whatever the standard was for them.
Well, okay, so I'm fact-checking myself. March 25th, 2024, Game Discovery Co. says EGS is taking 12%, so by far the least amount, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Sweet. Oh, that highlight section, that exciting highlight section of games we played is brought to you by people in our Discord like Zap. And Zap says he's playing Cyberpunk 2077 2077 again with Phantom Liberty. Ender's Logic, this high key may be one of the best games ever made. I am now on my fourth playthrough, and I've probably spent more time in this game than any other single game besides maybe Persona 5. Cyberpunk 2077 Phantom Liberty. I think a couple of people are playing that right now, rediscovering Cyberpunk in the Discord, and you could be one of them. Talk about your experience. I don't know. What do you do in Cyberpunk? Implant yourself, pretend to drive cars.
Watch an 18-minute cutscene.
Yeah, Bobby's favorite video game experience is watching cutscenes, if you didn't know, which is why he loves Cyberpunk 2077. So come down by the Discord. Tell us what games you're playing. We love to listen, and especially if you're playing a game that we've talked about. Share your experience with it. That's always cool to see. Next, we're going to On the Radar. So these are games we haven't played but have caught our attention, and Bobby is digging.
Digging for Oil in Turmoil, Deeper Underground. This is DLC for the game Turmoil. Have you guys heard of Turmoil? Christian, I feel like you might have heard of this one.
Well, you talked about this game a long time ago, so okay. I have heard about it.
All right, so you know it from when I brought it up the first time. I love this game.
Yeah.
It's like a sim 2D management game, pretty simple, where you're mining for oil and, you know, just trying to turn a profit in the Old West. And it's on the simple side. It's very enjoyable. It's not like one of these sim games that are going to give you a headache. And I really enjoyed it. In a strange way, Turmoil reminded me of this game called Mule from back in the day. Now, some of you old school gamers may recognize this. It existed on many platforms, but it originally, when I played it in the 80s, or probably not in the 80s, but it came out in the 80s. I probably played it in the 90s. It was on the old Atari PCs that for some reason one of my friends had. And Mule was just this amazing, like, multiplayer game where you would pick patches of land and you would basically try to cultivate that land and get resources and sell them and then just like make more money than everyone else on this mysterious planet. Terrible graphics. I mean, they got better in some of the later versions, but I absolutely loved that game. And Turmoil reminded me a lot of Mule. I think that's why I enjoyed it so much. And I just happened to stumble across a DLC that was coming out in September for this game. I didn't realize they had a DLC. The game came out 8 years ago, back in 2016. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah, and turns out this is not the first DLC. They had another one in 2018. I don't know how I missed that. But every time I see this game, I want to go back and play it. So I'm excited that they have some DLC. I read through the description. It's everything you'd expect from a DLC. New campaign mechanics, upgrades, new playable characters and NPCs, new areas and levels, just like typical DLC stuff. But for someone like me who spent a good amount of time playing the original game, that's what I need. So if you haven't played Turmoil, get that game first. Definitely play it. And I will probably be checking out the DLC here pretty soon.
This looks, yeah, last time you talked about it too, I was attracted to this game. It reminds me, we used to play this game as a family, a board game, and it was, the board game board was this kind of cube, and if you shook the cube, oil markers would go to different spots within it, and it was like this game where four players around the cube would pick patches and drill, and the distance that you drilled, you'd have to pay more money, but there was a greater chance of finding oil, and it would randomize every time you like shook the cube. I forget what the game is called, but I remember it because you would name your companies, and my grandma, who isn't, I don't know, she's just not known for her jokes or her funny comments. She decided to name her company Rudy Trudy. Her name's Edelshroud. Rudy is her nickname. And, she just couldn't stop laughing about it, but none of us got the joke. We're all like, what's so funny, Grandma? She's like, Rudy Trudy. Fucking hilarious.
It fucking rhymes. It's hilarious.
Yeah. So wow. If anyone is out there and knows what that board game is called, because I haven't been able to find it since I was a kid, but yeah, way ahead of its time. Like, we're talking about procedural generation of a board game, drilling for oil. It seems pretty cool.
That sounds like nothing I've heard of. That sounds like a pretty complex for a tabletop board game.
Yeah, I don't think it was so bad, but we're known for our complex games at the LaVenture household. Mm-hmm. One of our favorite Christmas games that we still play every year is the farming game. And it's like, if Monopoly hated you more than it already does, like you like plant cherries and you like plant cherries in spring planting. And then it'll be like, all the cherries on the board are permanently destroyed because like a bug infestation, and you have to pay the bank $15,000. And then three players will be like, well, I'm out of farming for the game. Goodbye. And it's just like a process of elimination. It's hardcore, like Oregon Trail or something. Anyways, That's enough about LaVenture game nights. Fantasy Map Simulator is the game I'm going to talk about. And it is a mix between a god sim and just something that you watch happen. So you can basically these fantasy nations that you're setting up play through time without you doing anything. It can just be up on your desktop monitor, which is pretty cool. Or you can fuck with them and like generate wizards and make them attack each other and kind of like fuck with the anthill a bit. What's different about this game is it looks so beautiful and it gives you a lot of tools to make your map look awesome. I played another game like this called World Box God Simulator, which was also really fun, but that was like these pixelated graphics and it was a little difficult to make it look really nice. Although some people did on Steam, I saw that you could download some really beautiful maps, but this one looks like Incarnate, which is this browser-based map maker that a lot of people use to make like D&D maps and stuff. Truly beautiful, and that it can play as your desktop background and you can kind of watch it as you work is, I think, extra cool. So yeah, Fantasy Map Simulator comes out September 4th, and I'm definitely going to be picking this one up for sure.
As a fellow D&D player and a DM, I'm highly interested in this.
Yeah. It seems super cool. And also it goes from like the medieval ages to like World War One steampunk time. So There's like a greater variety of in World Box God Simulator, it was just medieval age. But this seems like, it, you know, if a nation invades tanks, maybe they become really cool and they're like a little tiny part of the map and they take over the map and there's a cool story there. Yeah. Anyways, Nick, what do you got?
I have a game that I just discovered today. It's called Neo Berlin 2087. It's a new AAA game from Elysium Game Studio. It seems to be very cyberpunk-esque. It takes place in 2087, obviously. Else it wouldn't be in the name. They show, like, cyberpunk zombies or cyber zombies. Like, they're these people that have, like, brain augmentations, and they're all fried. And they, like, sprint at you and stuff. The combat features a lot of, like, auto-aiming guns. It takes place in third person and in first person. There's a lot of, like, electricity attacks and stuff like that. Your main character has, like, glowing eyes when he's, like, scanning a crime scene. You play as a special investigator who's investigating, like, this character who put out an emergency signal. You worked with her dad, and apparently she has some sort of tie-in and, like, superpower. It just seems very, very polished for what I've seen. I don't know if I would play this until I see the reviews. It's not like a pre-purchase game. Maybe it's like a play after reviews and after patches and maybe get it on a sale game. I do like my third person, first person shooters, and I do like cyberpunk stuff. But yeah, the graphics look amazing. Yeah, it just seems like a new AAA game. I feel like a lot of AAA games that are releasing nowadays that are new IPs don't really have souls, as weird as it sounds, especially like Concord, which is a new game coming out for PS5. A lot of people just say that it looks bland, but this one may be different. You never know.
In a weird way, it reminds me of those Deus Ex games a little bit.
Yeah. It does. It really does. The atmospheres, the lighting.
Yeah, trying to combine like RPG with a first-person shooter. I really want to go back, but I haven't played the later Deus Ex games because at the time they came out, my computer couldn't handle them. But
yeah.
But yeah, that first one was one of my favorite games of all time.
I'm just on the game developer website, the studio website, Elysium Game Studio, because I don't recognize the name in this game. Yeah, I'm met with like, this is like, they're going for graphical fidelity, like realism here. This isn't like, and really realism from the screenshots and everything. Like, this game doesn't really seem stylized. It seems, you know, they're going for realism.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just pure realism. And this is their first game, apparently, that they're coming out with, a new German studio with, it says, triple A veterans and experienced game developers with infinite passion, excelling in narrative depth and gameplay innovation. So this seems like their first crack of the can, which is exciting. And how did you hear about this game, Nick? Because I don't know, this seems like something that should have like a big marketing campaign or like a cool trailer out there.
So I ended up looking up new game trailers that come out every week. I do it pretty much every Saturday and every Sunday. And this one popped up and I was like, a PS5 game that I haven't heard about. Okay. And so I took a look at it and I was like, oh, this seems kind of polished already. Like, this seems very pretty. It seems fun and high paced or fast paced. And yeah, it just caught my eye and I watched the trailer, read some stuff, and it seems like a good pickup on a sale.
Cool. Yeah. I don't know how I missed it.
I like how they went.
Maybe we'll see this in Gamescom.
Neo Berlin 2087. So 10 more than Cyberpunk 2077.
Oh my God. I didn't even realize that.
They're trying to one up Cyberpunk with a different. Also, Neo Berlin implies like maybe this happens on an alien planet that's being settled. You know, New Berlin, not just the Berlin that we know. I'm sure there's like 50 Berlins in the United States. Okay, cool.
Berlin, Wisconsin.
Berlin, Wisconsin. That's where it takes place. Moo, moo, cow, cow. Guys, it's time for the game where you make money guessing a video game sound. There is $45 in the pot. Every week you guess, we throw five more dollars in the pot. You guess by emailing pixelshitshow@gmail.com. And remember, guys, be specific. You know, there's no harm in being specific. Likely you're going to get the guess wrong anyways. Don't be so broad, okay? This is the sound that you're guessing. Yeah, that's it. When we get to 10 guesses, I'm going to extend the length of the sound. But until then, that's all you have to go on. And of course, your two hints that Bobby, Emilio, and Nick have unlocked for you: mech and 90s. So this week, we have a guest from Fleer Flam, and he says, Energy Slice Armored Core Project Phantasma. What do you guys think about that?
I don't know what any of those words mean.
You ever played any of the old Armored Core
I know
games,
nothing Nick? Of mechs. Nick, you know, I defer to you on this one.
I don't think that's the correct answer, of course, but that's a good answer. Like, it's very specific, very niche.
Okay. Yeah. I like when we played that mech guessing game, Bobby did say mechs isn't his strong suit. That's fair to say, right? We can at least say that. okay. Fleer Flam, was your guess correct?
That is correct. Shorty.
Nope. Shoddy. No, it was not correct. Sorry. That means exciting times. Next week, there's going to be $50 in the pot. And please guess at pixelshitshow@gmail.com. If you know what that sound is, you'll win the jackpot. And Bobby, Emilio, and Nick usually get a chance to help out. Emilio isn't here, so it'll just be these two and me. And I think we're going to have a head-to-head typing competition here.
Oh, no. So Bobby's going to win.
Well, if Bobby wins, you unlock the hint. And if you win, Nick, you unlock the hint, because you guys are 2v1ing me and you don't know how fast these fingers go. Okay. Remember, Bobby doesn't have any letters on his keyboard. Okay. I think he's at a disadvantage.
The letters just slow you down, man.
It's all up here. All right. It's all up here in my mind. Yeah. So that link that Atom put in our chat for a later listener question, can we get that up? What is that typing test called?
I believe that is monkeytype.com.
Monkeytype.com. Okay, let's all go there, please, as a group.
All right, this is going to be very exciting for the listeners here.
Oh, yeah, totally. Well, you're going to hear a lot of clicking and clacking, but you have
to
turn
the mics closer clicking to the keyboard. I'm going to mic my keyboard here. Hold on.
Yeah, let's mic the keyboard. Okay. Okay, I'm putting it down.
Right, here we go. This is terrible for audio fidelity.
It totally is so bad. Okay.
Right, so we just did a 30-second.
Yeah. Where do I see the time?
It's up at the top.
To the top right.
Top right? Yeah, I'm on the 30. Okay.
I'm on the 30.
Okay, do we want to count down all of us? Like 3, 2, 1, and then on go start?
You just count.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine with me.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, go.
Fingers are cramping.
Okay, I have it. I have it.
Oh, Jesus, damn. That is awful.
That is awful. This is an awful idea, but I love it. Okay.
So what do we have to beat here?
What do we have to beat?
I think it's more exciting if you guys tell me yours first.
70 word per minute.
Okay. Respectable for a senior citizen. Bobby, what did you get?
Wow.
92.
92? Guys, I mean, I'm showing it on Twitch right now, so you guys know I'm not lying. 114 with 95% accuracy, which I think is good enough.
You used a bot, you cheater.
I didn't use a bot. These hands are magic. They fly over the keyboard like no one has seen before. And I think Bobby's at a little bit of a handicap because he doesn't have letters on it. That's just my opinion. The letters have to go on the keyboard. I don't know where else they
would
go.
I wasn't even looking at my keyboard. I don't think he has to either.
Nobody looks at their keyboard when they type. The letters are a crutch that you don't need. People don't realize that.
Okay. I mean, I have 104. That's all. The proof is in the words per minute. So unfortunately, unfortunately, Nick and Bobby did not unlock a hint this week. So you're still stuck with Mecha 90s. Tell them to do better. Okay. In the Discord, they haven't been bringing their A game lately, and that's why there's not enough hints. Pay no attention to last week's international telephone game, which, let's just say that didn't go too good. PixelShitShow@gmail.com to guess. Listener questions, Bobby, what do we got?
All right, we've got a few listener questions, starting with Warconius. This is from last week. It was for Nick, but he wasn't here. He says, Ragnarok is coming to PC. Nick, are you going to replay it? For me, the game starts slow, but the last half is exceptional.
I will not be replaying it. It's a long game, and I ain't got long game time right now. What I will say is that you are absolutely correct, and I actually was deciphering this in my head as I read it, and I have the same exact feeling. I think the reason why it starts off slow is that for people who are weird and didn't play the first one and then play the second one because it was a PS5 title and all this stuff, I think they wanted to put more weight in the game with cinematics and things like that so that if you didn't play the first one, you kind of understand what happened in the first one. And so that's why a lot of people say that it starts off slow, why the beginning of the game is not as good as the second half of the game. I will probably be picking it back up on PlayStation to finish the last like 5% of the game and then play the roguelike mode that they added. But hey, I'm not going to replay it. That's my answer.
Wow.
Hmm. All right. That's fair.
Yeah, that is fair. Yeah.
All right. Next question from Zap. What game series would you like to see another developer take a crack at? I'd love to see CD Projekt Red do Fallout.
I agree. That is my answer. I agree. That was what I was literally going to fucking say.
I would like Petroglyph to take a stab at Prison Architect. Petroglyph made Empire at War and a bunch of other RTS games. And I think the current way to play Prison Architect, I mean, you're an architect and it's kind of slow and you can pause the game. But I would maybe like something a little bit more fast paced that's more like unpausable, and you just have to deal with like jailbreaks as they happen instead of being able to kind of pause the game, think about what you're going to do. And maybe they do a cool job at that.
Cool.
Let's see. I never have a good answer for this question. So another developer trying to do Yeah, I don't know. I don't have a good answer.
Okay.
All right. Next question. This is exciting. We've got some listener questions from some people who have never asked one before. The Nasty Pigeon.
Welcome.
Yeah, welcome.
Nasty Pigeon, welcome. Oh, hey, maybe we should... Should we grade their usernames? Just Nasty Pigeon.
I like this one.
That's a 9 out of 10 for me. That's a Fallout London for me, for sure.
Nasty Pigeon. It sounds like a pilot's call. What do they call it? A call sign?
Is that... Call sign? This is Nasty Pigeon 1.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. All right. From Nasty Pigeon, have you ever taken days off work to play a game that was coming out? If so, what game? And if not, what game would you do it for?
Dude, of course I have. Are you fucking kidding me? I took days off work for Victoria 3 and Manor Lords. Any deep strategy game that I'm going to need like 6 or 7 hours of time to play that I'm really looking forward to, I think is what I would take a day off work to get into. And those days are really cool. If you've never played a game for an entire day properly, like an adult, you're just kind of going off what you did when you were 12 and you could just sit in front of a screen and look at it for 18 hours and nothing physically bad happened to your body. As an adult, wake up early, plan breaks, make sure you have your food covered, take a little walk around the block. This is all important.
Have somebody
parts.
Check on you.
Yeah. These are all important parts of... making sure you can play a game for 12 or more hours and really get the most out of the game and not feel like you're wasting away the day, which you are, by the way, totally you are, but you can fool your brain and body into thinking you're not. So grand strategy games for me. How about you guys?
I have never done that, which is surprising with all the WoW that I've played, never taken a day off work to just play a game. If I were going to do it for a game, I don't know. There aren't really like any games that ever come out where I'm just like, you know, this is like day one for me. That's very rare that I'm like day one, I'm going to be playing this game like nonstop.
I will be, and my answer for this is really the opposite of Bobby. Almost every newest WoW expansion, if I was working at the time, I have taken time out to play them. Only because me and my friends have a tradition where we will literally play as much as we physically possibly have to get to the new max level, which has been a mistake sometimes. Sometimes it's been 19 hours, 20 hours. And then the other game that I've taken off is Metal Gear Solid 5 when that came out. That's about it.
Hmm. All right.
Wow. World of Warcraft still has you in its clutches, Nick.
I'm playing the next one. Woo! Comes out next month.
Nice.
All right. And this next listener question, I also believe that this is first time caller, long time listener, I'm assuming, J. Beck Quest. What game has the most authentic or extensive player choice? For example, if you want to go on an adventure, go for it. Or if you want to hang out in the starting city and open up a shop, go for it.
Dude, it's Star Wars Galaxies. Come on. It's not even, you know, anyone who listens to this podcast hopefully knows about my tailor shop, how it took away many formative gaming years of my life, how a couple years ago, or maybe last year, I reopened up the tailor shop and SWG on like a fan-made server named Restoration. I think that game covers every base. From tailor, you can be a brawler, sniper, commando, squad leader, and they all play pretty distinct ways. And there's a bunch of crafting classes too. Like Shipwright makes everyone's ships that they use. Chef makes all the food that you use in the game. So it's based on these player-to-player interactions that fuel the game. And so I think that is what makes it the most extensive player choice game.
I would agree with that.
You can't start a strip... Yeah? Okay, cool.
Well, I mean, the very little that I've played of Star Wars Galaxy, I did notice that it really allowed you to do anything you want. The only other game that I've played that, I don't know. See, I'm coming from the frame of reference of World of Warcraft, where for the longest time, I think it's changed a little bit, but for the longest time, it was like, this is how you earn XP. Like, questing was the best way to earn XP in WoW. And it wasn't until much later that they were like, okay, well, you could actually earn a bunch of XP by doing battlegrounds or PvP or other options. But still, I think like professions, I don't think they really give you that much XP in WoW. But when I played Guild Wars 2, I was like, wow, dude, like everything I do gives me XP. Like it doesn't matter what I do, as long as I'm doing something, like I'm earning a good amount of XP here. And that was kind of refreshing. There were a lot of things I didn't like as much about Guild Wars 2 compared to WoW, but that the XP system I really enjoyed.
Bobby, Guild Wars 2, I'm being bombarded with YouTube ads for their latest expansion. And Nick, have you ever played Guild Wars 2?
I have. I do like that game. I like the aesthetic and a bunch of stuff like that, but I have sold my soul to Blizzard, and I can't play any other MMO or they come to my house and chop off my toes.
Okay. Well, we won't tell them. Like, we can always pretend that you don't. Is that something you guys would be interested in going in as a group and just experiencing a new MMO or like an old MMO that they still somehow make money and update Guild Wars 2? Because that was before World of Warcraft, right? Guild Wars 2 came out?
Guild Wars 2 came out in 2011.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that was 2011. Yeah, and I haven't played it in about 10 years. I think I played the first expansion that they had, but I haven't touched it in a very long time.
Because it's free to play now. Maybe the expansion packs wouldn't be, but we wouldn't get that far in the content. Yeah. I think it would be cool. What does a new player experience look like on Guild Wars 2, like a over 12-year-old game or whatever it is?
Mm-hmm. There were some cool things in that game, though. I remember it had this thing where you could combo off of other people's attacks. They would lay down some sort of like area attack, and then if you didn't attack on top of that, it had some sort of synergy. There were some cool things about that game, but at the end of the day, it just was like, this wasn't WoW.
Nothing can reach that eye. Nope. Nothing can crack the crack.
Okay, last question from Atom. I was looking over at my Zoomer coworker type at their desk and realized they are typing extremely slow. I asked if they ever use a computer at home or school, and they said they don't, which boggled my mind. Their average speed on monkeytype.com was 30 words per minute. Mine is around 100. Typing fast in Counter-Strike was the only way to talk shit and stay alive. So my question is, what is your average typing speed?
Well, 113, baby. They call me the fastest typer in the West. They call me on the streets.
I used to, when I typed even more than I did now, like when I was typing for my job, was 94. So.
Okay. Yeah, I'd say I'm around 100 on a good day. I don't know. I don't really engage try hard mode too much anymore. Something happened like when I hit 40 once. I swear, I'm talking to guys that are under 40 here. No, Amelia is nowhere to be found to back me up on this, but God, once you reach a certain age, it's just like, you don't really put as much effort into a lot of things. I guess certain things, I shouldn't say everything, but like certain things, you definitely are like, but yeah,
okay.
I feel like my typing speed has kind of slowed in the recent years.
It's because you don't have the... What if you did the test with the letters on the keyboard?
Dude, I haven't used a keyboard with letters on it since 2008.
Oh my God.
Yeah. This has been going on for a while, dude. So I don't think that's it.
Is that like a religious stance? Oh, Bobby, we need you to do work on this computer. And you're like, I'll remote in from my computer. But I'm not going to use this computer's dirty fucking lettered
keyboard. No, I have a lettered keyboard at work. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, you'd be surprised. Everyone looks at my keyboard and thinks like, whoa, that must be so hard. And I'm like, try and type on it. And they do. And they actually like, it's not as difficult as you'd think. You'd be surprised how little you look down. Like, are you really looking at your fingers when you type?
Yeah. When I got to 113, baby, I was, because I wanted to be accurate, and I feel like a lot of times if I type really fast and I don't look, I'm not accurate, even with the letters. So the extra looking improves that, I think.
The extra looking, okay.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys don't understand maybe this champ typing speed lifestyle, but... All right.
Well, that is our last listener question. What's everyone playing next week?
Shit, goddamn. I don't know. Does anyone want to play Guild Wars 2 with me?
Nah, dude, I gotta play more Fallout London. I gotta fucking beat this thing.
I'd be excited to hear more about Fallout
London.
Why don't
you play Fallout London instead of playing Guild Wars like a weirdo?
Yeah, I guess I could. It's only $15. I wanted to go back to Total War Pharaoh and talk about it while you were on the podcast, Nick, because I think the actual battles themselves, I didn't really touch on last time I talked about it, but there's just mechanically so much interesting things happening that I think are going to be carried over to the Star Wars Total War. Like, I think it's very obvious to me what they're trying to do here. So kind of wanted to talk about that.
I want to play Pharaoh, especially after all the stuff that they've done to it, and they apologized and they said they were going to fix a bunch of stuff. And apparently they have, according to you and some other people. So, I might pick it up. I don't like the Bronze Age. That's the problem though, but you never know.
Really?
It might be fun. I hate the Bronze Age. I think it's bullshit.
I think it's
so boring.
Can we dig deeper into this a little bit? Why is it boring? Tell us.
I just think that like culturally at the time, not many cultures are very different that were interacting with each other.
What?
Compared to like the differences in like later years after the Bronze Age, especially like during the reign of like Genghis Khan, you had people like completely different cultures fighting each other and different like arts of war and things like that that weren't standardized. And you still had like iron weapons and bows and arrows that were compact and a lot more unit variance even in real life. That kind of sounds weird when I say that. I just think it's more interesting. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't want a metal that I can bend by using my hands.
Dude, it's a whatever. We're not going to agree. First of all, you have these awesome chariots that are just being invented.
That's another thing I don't like. I don't like chariots. I hate them. In Total War Warhammer.
How could you just not like chariots? But you have
get
like,
on the horse, dum dum.
Well, they haven't invented stirrups yet, Nick. Come on, they only have chariots.
How the fuck did humanity not invent stirrups after like 4,000 years of existing?
Bro,
thanks, Egyptians.
It didn't all come at once.
Fucks.
They just liked their chariots. No. They didn't need stirrups.
You got plenty of crocodiles. Make a crocodile's fucking saddle and put some stirrups on it.
Oh, I thought it was so interesting. Even playing, I'm playing as Troy and even fighting the other Greek factions like the Mycenaeans and the, I forget what the other one is. This isn't backing up my argument, but playing completely differently when I encounter battles with them, I'm like, oh my God, they're using like proto phalanxes and I'm using like more dispersed unit tactics and trying to like envelop, you know, that's not the biggest difference in the world, but still was exciting for me to solve that challenge when I ran into them. Cause I'm like, oh, I can't just fucking defeat these guys like I can defeat the Trojan rebels in my land. Like this is going to be a completely different thing. So,
yeah. Like I said, I like Total War games in general, so I might check it out, especially if it's on sale. So,
okay. So I don't know. What are you guys playing other than Fallout?
I already said Fallout New Vegas. I mean, Fallout London.
I'm going to be playing some more DRG Survivor, but I still want to check out Star Wars Bounty Hunter, the Doom mods.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of things. I'll have something new, but I'm going to be playing some, definitely playing some DRG Survivor.
Okay, cool. Well, Nick, as cousin of the, not cousin, as a relation of the person who usually closes us out, do you want to close out this podcast?
Sure. On behalf of Sniper, Bobby, and myself, Bronze Age titties.